Welcome to It Is What It Is. I'm Shaw Marie, your lovely host. Today's episode is brought to you by Golden Aquatics. Because I'm chilling in the fish room, hiding from my children. Because I didn't record last night because I fell asleep because of cuddles. Yep, the cuddle monster, it got me. And I didn't record on Sunday because it was a lazy day with my family, and I didn't want to because everybody was just chilling. And so I just went with the vibe and I just chilled. And so we didn't. And I realized that, like, my last one, obviously, I was very angry and upset. And I didn't point out the people lately who were, like, being real sweethearts and, like, reaching out to me and letting me know that they like my show and everything else. And so just real quick, I won't say like the last name or anything, but Kim from fucking Ireland, I love you. I never in a million years thought anybody in Ireland would ever know my name. And so I'm literally looking at Google pictures right now of where she said she's from. And girl, do you RMB? Like, this place is gorgeous. So I just want to say thank you. You reaching out to me and letting me know you like my show, literally, even though it was like a couple days ago, I'm still like on cloud nine about it because Ireland? Anywho, that was amazing. So, yeah, since I fell asleep with cuddles last night, I have to do this podcast before my sweet little baby Logan, he's my nephew, comes over here. He's going to be my little nephew, like my little big nephew. Like, I'm not even kidding. You guys, I'm going to ask my sister if I can post a picture of him. But my nephew is smaller than he is younger than my daughter, and my daughter is 2. He's like not even like a couple months younger than her. But anyway, the boy is massive, y'all. Like, you would just think he lives off potatoes or something. Like, the boy is huge. He is going to tower everyone in my family. And my sister's tall. Like, super tall. So, I don't know. All my sisters are tall. My 2 sisters. I'm short as fuck. But yeah, enough with the banter. So anyway, today's story, we are going to go back in time to 1980, July 20th of 1980. And we are going to Morristown, Tennessee. So rewind the clock almost 40 years ago. And here we go. So on July 20th, 1980, in Morristown, Tennessee, almost 40 years ago, the best friends, Mitzi and Mary Elizabeth Jones, she was born on February 25th, 1964. They were walking to Cherokee Park, which is gorgeous according to the Google photos, absolutely gorgeous, when a man claiming to be a cop pulled alongside of them. This is Mitzi's own word. He showed us his badge, identified, and his identification. He had a gun on his hip. That's what made us believe he was a police officer. And said he was looking for 2 runaways and told us their names. And could we help him? And just a reminder, and I know every podcast reminds you of this, so just remember, no adult needs your help. Do not help an adult. They got this. No one needs your fucking help, especially a cop. Honey, you're a cop. Do your goddamn job. The girl said, no, they didn't, and they hadn't seen them. And so he drove away. They spend a couple of hours, like 2 or 3 hours in the park, and then they leave the park. The same cop comes back around. Once again, we're going into Mitzi's own words. Quote, he said he had spotted them and they were camping out and wanted to know, since we knew them, if we would help them talk them out of the woods so that they could take them home. The girl said, yes, because these are good girls, and they wanted to be helpful. These are children that you are prideful of. You raised them to be good, wonderful girls, and so they're helpful. So they go to help this guy and to help their friends, obviously. So they get into the vehicle with him and they drive into a small neighborhood where he pulls off. He tells Mary to stay in the car and he's like, girl, you stay here because I think if we all go, it's going to scare him away because that's too many people and so they're going to get afraid. So you stay. If I need you, I'll holla. If I don't, chill. And so this is once again Mitzi's own word. She says, quote, he said, why don't you go there and talk them out. I'll show you where they're at. As I started, he held down the fence for me because it's like a parking lot kind of area. And then there's like a field and then some woods, but there's a barbed wire fence, chain link kind of fence. The top of it's kind of pokey, I guess. Sharp enough that it ripped a shirt of some sort and had fabric on it. When the police got there was a piece of fabric hanging on a certain spot of this fence. And so it was at least sharp enough to do that, to tether clothing. There we go. Tether. So she says, he held down the fence for me to cross over, and as soon as I crossed over that fence, he grabbed me. I flipped around and started fighting him. I clawed his face. I hit him. I fought him with everything I had in me. I was little. And she is still the cutest little... Well, now she's like, don't be offended, honey, but the cutest little old lady. Like... Oh, she's like a grandma, like now, and like, oh my God, she's just little. She's so precious, so little. And so he had a pair of handcuffs. He cuffed my left wrist and jumped on me, and he held a gun to my head. He told me not to scream, and the whole time I was screaming, run, Mary, go get help. I was hoping she would hear me, and he kept saying, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to hurt you. And then I said, so why are you doing this? Well, he reached down and unbuttoned and unzipped my shorts. All of a sudden, I seen something silver. He came down with a knife and he cut my throat. I thought, play dead, Mitzi, play dead. So I acted like I was choking. I acted like I was choking on my own blood. Because I was bleeding pretty bad. He stabs her in the chest. And then something stops this man. He stops. They look. It's her 16-year-old best friend, Mary. She is watching what's going on. She had come over the fence. And this is her own words, quote, before he took off running, he reached around and handcuffed my other hand around a tree. I couldn't believe what was happening. I mean, here we were, thought we was being helping an officer, and now I'm laying handcuffed to a tree, my throat slashed. I'm trying to get the handcuff off my left hand, but it's just too tight. I work and I work and I work with my right hand, and finally, I got it out. Something told me, it's not your time, Mitzi. You're going to have to fight to live. End quote. This badass, dude, she runs through the fucking woods into an open field, right? The whole time she's screaming. Meanwhile, this guy, some reports say he was a cop where I learned of this. What they don't say he was a cop. They just say his name was Jerry. And he was a cute little old dude. And so she runs out of the woods. He comes outside because he hears it. And he's like, what the fuck? Because it's like private property and shit. So he's like, what? And he goes out there with some binoculars. And he's looking around. And there she is at the end of the wood line, laying there. So he goes, grabs his gun, runs out there. He goes to her and she says, "I've been stabbed." He picks her up and she tells him that her friend is still in the woods with the guy. Okay? And so he takes her to his house, has another neighbor call the police and get the ambulance and get her off to the hospital because she is bleeding profusely. He said there was a ton of blood. And that she was just little. He said he just scooped her up. Like, she was just so little. And so was Mary. Mary was very smallish. Like, well, it looks like she was. And, so, like I said, he tells her about Mary, that she is still in the woods with the guy. Okay. Well, when the cops get there, he goes back in the woods with the cops with his gun, and they're looking for Mary and they're looking for this guy. They find Mary. She was raped and handcuffed to a tree. She had 4 stab wounds. One of them on her neck was so bad that you can tell whoever had put the knife in her neck had twisted the knife, so there was a hole. Mary's shorts were 30 yards away. And her shirt was pulled up around her chest. You can tell that she had fought for her life and she had fought hard. Her sister was called and told, but her parents couldn't identify her because it was just too hard. And so her uncle volunteered to go in and ID her. The family says he was never the same after that. And that her sisters say in a news interview that the look of fear was still on her face as she lay in the casket. Like, they couldn't. It was just permanent. She was scared. You can tell that she was just terrified before passing. And so Mitzi says that Jerry, quote, "He is my guardian angel. God brought him out there. It was truly a miracle." So the cops go, end quote. The cops go to the hospital and they're like, "We don't know what she remembers, what's going on. So we're just going to let her kind of go and tell her story and we'll just see what happens." And so shockingly, Mitzi is like, "I'm fucking ready. Like, I'm talking now. This is what happened." And this sweet baby girl at the time, she was just so little, guys, just so young. She tells them, quote, "He had strawberry blonde hair. He had a medium build, big old bug eyes. His eyes is what I remember so well, bugging out of his head. I looked him face to face. I fought with him and I pleaded with him to stop doing what he was doing. His eyes, I seen every day. I close my eyes, I see his face." End quote. She could also tell them what he was driving. Quote, "He was driving a little yellow pickup truck. It had fishing rods in the back." End quote. The cops spent all night long chasing down yellow trucks. There was a radio station in Tennessee down there that was doing updates for 24 hours. And they had a ton of tips come in, especially the runaways. The cop says, quote, "The runaways called. They go, they talk to the young boys. They say they know somebody that does drive a yellow truck and matches the police sketch that Mitzi has composed. And that they knew some piece of shit named Randy Lee May, a guy that worked at a gas station that wanted to be a cop. He was also going to college part-time at night for criminal justice." And so they go And they obviously know that, well, that's how he knew how to play cop so well and, like, convince the girls to get into the vehicle with him. And so he has a hard-on for cops. Like, he is, like, this weird fucking creepy dude who wants to be a cop so bad that when the cops go and, like, search his name, he's applied for law enforcement jobs all over, like, to get into the department some way or another. And so when they go to his address, his fucking wife, answers the door, and she's like, no, he's at work. But they do see his yellow pickup truck outside of his house. And so they go to his work to ask him some questions. His dick gets hard right away, right? Because he's like, oh my God, I'm finally being talked to by cops. And he's just dick happy. Well, I don't know if his dick really got hard, guys. So don't be like, don't judge him on that. Total speculation. I'm going to assume he at least chubbed out. Anyway, so they go and they're talking to him. And he says that day he was fishing nearby, so that's why Mitzi saw his truck and, you know, could ID him. And that's why the boys were like, oh, yeah, for sure. And so that he was fishing, and that when he was fishing, he left his keys in the truck. And somebody must have came and taken his truck and gone and done whatever they did and then brought his truck back, parked it where he parked it, and went about their criminal day. But he only knew this after coming to the realization, after he went home, mowed his yard, detailed his truck. And then when he was doing that and cleaning his truck, he's like, well, shit, damn. There's some things out of place here. So he claims that he drives to the police station, talks to an officer, makes a report of all this stuff that's amiss, and it's just so question markish. We don't know what the hell's going on. And so they're like, the detective, right? He's like, yeah, no kidding. Someone stole it and took it back. Whoa. You're like the only guy this has ever happened to in the world. Who the fuck steals it and then go parks it back unless they're your child? You know what I mean? I stole my mom's rig plenty of times. Anyway, he says his knife and other things, they're gone. And they know this fool is just trying to fucking distance himself from everything. So they go, they try to track down this mysterious officer or find a report of some sorts. They find nothing. They find no report. We can't find an officer who says that they talked to him. And so that concretes it in their head. They're like, for sure, he's just distancing himself. And so they're like, hey, buddy, can we look around your house? Once again, his little man, Dick Chubb, he was like, oh my God, cops search my house. Yeah, yeah. And they're like, do you have any guns? He's like, I do. And he pulls out a gun from in between his mattresses. And he's like, I got this one, guys. Look how cool I am. So they take it. They're also looking around. And they notice a handcuff holster that is empty. And so they're like, yeah. The guy must have stole the handcuffs, too. The guy that stole my truck and brought it back to me, he just didn't give me back my handcuffs. And so they tell him, they're like, man, we know you're full of shit. Tell us the truth. Tell us what you know, Randy. And so he cracks and he tells almost the same story Mitzi tells. Almost. Except for he doesn't bring up the part about the runaways. I mean, he does about the part about the runaways. That's what matches up. He does say, I tricked them. I said I was a cop. I did the runaway story. I did try to rape Mitzi, but doesn't remember stabbing her. Does not remember any of that at all. And so when they bring up the actual rape of Mary and her death, he says all he remembers is taking Mary into the woods and cleaning off his knife and leaving the woods. And so he takes the cops back to his house and gives over everything. The other empty handcuff case, the keys to the cuff, the gun, the badge. And just so they knew that everything they had on this fucking asshole would stick, they had Mitzi do a lineup, and she picks him out right away. She says, quote, "I was shaking all over. I was scared to death. There was no doubt in my mind it was him, the one that attacked me." So Randy takes, end quote. So Randy takes a deal so that they don't have to go to a trial and that Mitzi doesn't have to testify against him, because they know if Mitzi gets up on the stand and tells her story, dude's gonna die. Like, they will give him death, no questions. Because not only is she a survivor, but she remembers hearing her friend screaming, like her friend dying. Like, she knows my friend is dead. This poor sweet girl. Like, she is the survivor. She has that survivor's guilt. It is just so horrible. And so they say that he gets 30 years without parole. But in Tennessee, it's different. In Tennessee, you get good behavior and good points. And it's kind of like some federal prisons do it, where you can take like classes and group classes and stuff like that. And some of these classes can take up like years off your sentence, years, months, whatever. And then credit for good time, where it's like, obviously good time is self-explanatory. You're a good inmate. You don't cause any shit. You do what you're supposed to do. You serve your time. You make it easy on everybody. And that a life sentence is classified as a percentage of life. And I guess his is 30%. And that just 6 years after he was in prison, he was in front of the parole board. And now her family has to face him and keep him where he belongs. Mitzi says, quote, "It's exhausting. It's horrible to have to relive it. But I made a vow to Mary, as long as there was breath in me, that I would go and fight to keep him there. There has not been a day that has passed I haven't thought about it, about my friend Mary. He said he was going to come back and kill me, and I truly believe if they let him out, he will kill me. I will never have a normal life," end quote. And now Mary's two sisters and brother also fight to keep him where he is, and they go to the parole board. Her brother has statements, photographs. He keeps a folder. He knows everything he shouldn't know, just to keep this piece of trash where he is in prison, where he belongs, for taking a young woman's life. Her sister says, I quote, "She fought for her life, so we fight for hers. Even though we can't bring her back, we continue her fight." The next fight these guys are going to have with the parole board of Tennessee is in 2020. And they will be there, 2023, sorry. He just had one. It just got denied. They will go back in front of the board. They do tell the family that eventually he will be out, that he will get out one day. He will. And so at the end of this, I'm going to tell you guys how you guys can write the parole board and just, if you want to, just express your thoughts on how this community should stand up for Mary and her family and do what's right. These people are victims. They should not have to go and tell a board of people why he's a piece of shit. Look at what he's done. Look at what they've been through. Look at what he put that poor 16-year-old girl through. He put a knife in this young woman's neck and twisted it. He raped her. There was a small amount of DNA found within her. He is a horrible person. And I understand Tennessee has different laws. Everybody has different laws. We may not like them. But if we can help this family just a little bit, the fact that Mitzi can never move past this and she has to constantly relive it and go through it and tell her story that has never wavered is heartbreaking. She should not have to do that. She is a victim. She should not have to sit there and plead her case on why this man needs to be where he is. It is horrible. Absolutely horrible that that is what a family, a victim, has to do. Just to keep a person that they are truly terrified of where they belong. It's horrible and saddening and heartening, and it breaks my heart. And Mitzi, I feel for you. She did. So where I came across this is, I believe when I grow up, I'm going to be just like Paula Zahn, bro. She is just amazing. I love her. Paula, if you ever hear this, girl, you're my hero. She's had 20 seasons of On the Case. 20 seasons. She's been a reporter. She's amazing. Absolutely amazing. And this is episode 7 of season 20, A Predator in the Woods. Absolutely amazing. Paula Zahn. I think I'm saying her last name right. I'm really horrible with last names. But oh my God, girl, I absolutely adore you. You are amazing. What I want to be when I grow up. You know what I mean. She's literally just amazing. So if you don't watch her show on the ID channel, what is wrong with you? Go. You're like 20 seasons behind me, bro. So go catch up. Anywho, so you guys can write Tennessee Board of Parole and then put regarding Randy May parole hearing at 401 James Robertson's Parkway, Nashville, Tennessee, 37243. Bam. And there's also a email address, bop.wmail@tn.gov. Again, that is the Tennessee Parole Board of Parole regarding Randy May parole hearing, 401 James Robertson's Parkway, Nashville, Tennessee, 37243, or send an email at bob.webmail@tn.gov and let them know. The world believes that this family deserves justice and that they shouldn't have to fight to keep a killer rapist in a prison. He should know that's where he belongs. And her brother even says that if he dies there, he still has not made, that's not enough time. It's still not enough time for the life he took. Mary was amazing. She was the key piece of her family. She was sweet. She was kind. She did not have to live through that. And Mitzi should not have to see her sit 4 feet away from the man who ruined her life and who scarred her. This man is the man she sees when she closes her eyes. And she has to sit there 4 feet away from him and fight to keep him where he is. They've had silent protests. They've had candlelight vigils. They've had peaceful protests. They do. I'll post the pictures of them holding the signs. And every year they remind everyone of their sister and the life that is lost and that her life was valuable. It meant something. And she was a very, very important part of their family and that their family has never healed from the loss of Mary. And so let's help Mary's fight continue, guys. Let's not let Mary's fight stop. This family needs the world to help them. It's not fair. So There we go. You guys, this is my episode for Tuesday, and I hope you guys like it. And please share it and like it, comment it, all that great stuff. I will comment back. I will message you back. My children are breaking into the room now. It's going to get a little, probably loud. But follow me on Twitter at itiswhatitis208, because that's where I'm from. On Instagram at itiswhatitispod19, all together, one word. If you want to go to Instagram and check out Golden Aquatics, our fish are on there. We sell guppies too. Our guppies aren't on there yet, but eventually they will be. And so you guys can go to Golden Aquatics and check out the fish room and all that fun stuff if you want. And go to YouTube. It is what it is, a true crime podcast. And also my playlist is on there. If you type in Shawn Marie Johnson, it shows my playlist. I do it for my sister. So jam out to my music. You know what I mean? If you want, if you don't, it's cool. And subscribe and go to the Facebook page. I'm really more interactive on Twitter and Instagram, but Facebook is still there as well. So, yeah. I love every one of you. Have a good day, guys. Bye.